Good afternoon. Joining us on the line now is Carrie Fraze. She's a British broadcast journalist and PR consultant who's been living in Barcelona since 2006. In 2008, she founded mumabroad.com, one of Europe's leading websites for international families living in Spain, France, Italy or Germany. She's one of the founding members of Remain in Spain, which campaigns to protect the rights of British citizens living in Spain and Europe. She's the editor of the book Hashtag Living the Dream, now in its second edition. It is expat life stripped bare. Welcome to the show, Carrie.
Hi, Hannah.
Hi, thanks so much for joining us. I feel like there's so much for us to talk about. I'm really excited. I'm like, right, where do I start? Let's start with you moving to Spain. Why did you move to Barcelona?
Well, I fell in love with it during the Olympics when I'd graduated and I was teaching English like everybody else. But I already had a place in a postgraduate to do journalism. But I said to myself, I'm going to come back and live in this city one day because it was so dynamic. It had turned its back from being against the sea towards the sea. It opened out internationally, and it was just this vibrant, dynamic city. So 15 years later, I met a young man at a wedding who was also a lover of all things Spanish. And within a year, we'd moved back to Barcelona. And within 3 years, we were married. And within 6, we had 2 kids. So that's the story in a nutshell. But it was a lifestyle choice, to be honest. I'd always loved everything to do with Spain. And it was hard work at the beginning, but ultimately worth it, with lots of challenges along the way, which I'm sure you're going to address.
Yeah. I mean, I love cities by the sea. I'm a real city person, but I also love the beach and the ocean. So for me, having a city like Barcelona by the sea, I just feel like you've got the best of both worlds.
Yeah, it does. I mean, it's got this incredible architecture, you know, really vibrant restaurant scene and these amazing beaches and some great sort of coastal resorts up and down the coast as well. So, yeah, it really does have the best of both worlds, although in the summer, especially this summer, it does get a little bit overrun by tourists.
Yes.
You can see why they come here.
So tell us about Mum Abroad, because that's done really well.
Yeah, so Mum Abroad actually initially started for purely selfish reasons. I found myself with a newborn alongside a very good friend of mine in around 2007 after the birth of my first child. And we were in Barcelona, a city that wasn't our own. We were new mums, which is challenging in itself. And also in an environment where, you know, motherhood then was pretty much when you had a newborn, you just pass it over to the grandmother and the grandparents and they look after it. There really were no sort of facilities or services catering for anyone outside the family environment, let alone for anyone foreign. So we initially set up the site, which was called Barcelona Mum, before it became Mum Abroad, just putting it out there to see if anyone was in a similar situation to us, English speakers, not necessarily from the UK, but from all over Europe. And we found that thousands of other women were in very similar situations. So the site grew organically from then. So it became Mum Abroad Spain. And then about sort of 6-7 years ago, we expanded to France, Germany and Italy.
Great stuff. So it's still going strong.
Yeah, it is. I mean, now as I've grown up, my kids have grown up, it's less about the little ones and more about sort of, you know, teenage sort of angst and struggles and maybe applications into university. Yeah. And also we like to give a sort of a platform to women who've, as in all situations when they have children, they've had to put aside, you know, their professional work. And we try and give a platform for a lot of these professional women to get back into the workplace, which is doubly hard when you live abroad. It's bad enough when you're in your home country. So, you know, it has sort of grown as we've grown up as well.
Yeah, I like that. So this book then, Hashtag Living the Dream, we hear the expression living the dream all the time. And I'm sure most people who live here have got friends and family that are back home, whether that's UK or other countries throughout Europe and the world, who say things like, oh, you're so lucky. You're so lucky to live in Spain. And I always think, well, it was my choice to move here. And I think if you think it's lucky to live in Spain, you could move to Spain. It kind of annoys me a little bit.
Or maybe they think it's lucky that you had the ability to be able to do that, because I'm so with you, Hannah. I felt exactly the same way. And there's a kind of toxic positivity there, isn't it? Because basically the idea of hashtag living the dream, which is an ironic title, came during COVID, when people would say that to me and they'd say, oh, you're so lucky because you live in Barcelona, you live by the sea. But it didn't mean that we weren't suffering the same way that everyone else was suffering. And in some ways, it kind of almost made it worse. And it's a bit like, I try and sort of relate it to like a funeral, for example. You kind of want the wind and the rain and the grey clouds. And the sun just didn't seem right during COVID, when everyone was really struggling mentally. So, but people would say, oh, you know, you're so lucky. You know, this is, you know, you could just go down and have a cocktail by the sea. And it was really difficult to try and get the point across that actually I really didn't feel like that at all. In fact, I craved sort of the home comforts of the UK and the familiarity in my extended family. So that's where it originated from.
Yes, people think that because we're living by the sea and living in generally a much warmer climate, that automatically life is just better and easier. And for sure, that the sunshine, I think, definitely can help with people's moods and how they feel about things, but we still have all of the same kind of challenges, and sometimes more challenges than we might have living in our home country.
Oh, absolutely. And I think that's what I tried to get across in the book. And there's 9 different stories about the different challenges that we all face. And the challenges, as you say, are exactly the same as challenges that we might face in our home country. But sometimes they're exacerbated when you live abroad. And I think during COVID, when the book was written, that became even more so the case. You know, the issues that we tackle are isolation, lack of integration, loneliness, grief, you know, the challenges of motherhood, being away from home, all those kind of issues, which, you know, when things are going well, it is a fantastic life living abroad. But when things are tough, I truly believe that they're much, much tougher than if you were living at home with all your sort of familiar sort of culture around you, your family, your friends, you know, the supermarket that you know about, being able to sort of phone services and not have to sort of shout down the phone to try and get your point across and all that kind of stuff. So, yeah, I mean, I think in some ways, the challenges are good because it keeps you challenged. It keeps you sort of constantly out of your comfort zone, which is good for one. But you don't want that all the time, you know, especially during COVID. It felt, I think, for a lot of us, it just felt completely overwhelming.
Yeah. So let's look at some of the big issues that various women who've contributed contributed to the book have brought up. One of them is drinking culture. The idea that because a lot of us live a more outdoor life, you know, it's really easy to finish work, go for a drink, or when you're going for lunch on the beach, you know, having some wine or whatever, a lot more than maybe people would in their home country.
Yeah, I think so. And this is the chapter by Adrian Walder, and her chapter is entitled Calling Time on Drinking Culture. And she went out to live in Hong Kong, and Hong Kong has a very big expat community. And she found herself drawn into that almost immediately, to the extent where every night she was going out partying and, you know, just getting caught up in that drinking culture. And I think also you have a sort of sense of, you know, that sort of more sense of freedom when you're away from your sort of home, no one really telling you how to behave, and you can get caught up in that environment more and more. And then she realized also that she was drinking to sort of cover up what had been an incredibly tough period of her life, when she'd had several miscarriages. And she stopped. And so the story is about, you know, how easily it is to get caught up in that. And then the challenges involved in stopping drinking, especially in an expat environment. And she's managed to do that. But, you know, she questions whether, if she hadn't gone abroad, whether she would have got herself caught up so deeply in it.
Yeah, definitely. Interesting one. Another one is the whole idea of business, setting up a business in another country. That has its has its own challenges, that even if people have set up many businesses in their home country, isn't going to be the same.
No, and this is from Deborah Gray, who has an incredible story, really. She'd worked for a PR company for many years in London and ended up staying in Barcelona by chance. She was only going there for a few months. I mean, this is the case with so many people who move abroad. They say, oh, I'm only going for a couple of months. And, you know, 10 years later or 20 years later, they're still there. So she decided that, well, first of all, she tried to work within a PR environment in Barcelona. And she realized that the culture was so different to hers, that the working practices were so different. They didn't even properly, in her world, understand what public relations was. And she realized that that wasn't going to happen. So she decided to set up on her own. But the, you know, the red tape and the bureaucracy and also the machismo that she faced as a woman was really challenging. And, you know, she's got some very funny stories and also some very sad stories about how she managed to overcome them. And, you know, it's all the more rewarding at the end when you do this, but it was extremely challenging. But now she's, you know, her company is one of the top five companies run by females in Spain. So she's done incredibly well as a result of it.
Oh, that's fantastic.
Yeah.
Love that. Another thing we've talked a little bit about, obviously having children and having or not having that support network, whether it's grandparents, aunties, godparents, things like that, that you might, or for friends even, that you might have more at home, that can be hugely challenging for people to not have that support network to rely on just for babysitting and spending time with your kids growing up.
Yeah, and this is Avivit's story on motherhood, which is beautifully written, lots of pathos, lots of funny stories, but you come away thinking, wow, what an incredible woman. This is someone who had four young children and was following her husband around because he was a journalist. So it was the classic trailing spouse situation, but she herself was, you know, or is a professional journalist. And she doesn't always just not struggle with motherhood and not being able to have her family on tap, but also the fact that she was the one having to look after not just one child, but four children moving from country to country. So she found that feeling of rootlessness very difficult, and just all the practical challenges as well as the cultural challenges when she moved from, you know, Israel to Paris to Belgium and then to London. So yeah, that is extremely difficult, especially with young children.
Oh, I can imagine. Sue Wilson, MBE, I've interviewed her before on the show. She's the founder of Bremain in Spain, and she talks quite a bit about Brexit and things, which again, we're seeing challenges all the time, aren't we now?
Yeah, hers is a really incredible story. I admire Sue so much. I mean, not just because she found her, you know, mainly really because she found her true passion at the age of 67. This is someone who wanted to go to the Costa Blanca to retire at the time when, you know, Brexit was building up and then the referendum, and she found herself very angry about, like all of us really who live outside of the UK, very angry about what happened, and found herself with, you know, something that she could really get her teeth into. She said she could never believe that this had happened at her age. And she said it's the best thing that ever happened to her, even though obviously it has its challenges. So it's twofold. It's the story of Brexit and, you know, how someone who'd never done public speaking was suddenly speaking to, you know, hundreds of people, you know, on the part of Remain. And also about, you know, just an older woman's challenge and of living abroad and then finding her passion. So it's a really uplifting story as well.
And there's an interesting story with Annabelle Cotton, who talks about a bit about the culture shock. She moved to Australia, and it's funny. I've been in Spain 19 years this year, and there's still things that I kind of, I don't want to say don't get, but struggle to get yeah. on with, to do with Spain, like the opening hours of banks and shops and things, and still find it frustrating to not be able to go to the bank, you know, after 1 o'clock, or that shops are shut in the middle of the day and, you know, open again at 5 and things like that. And sometimes I just completely forget and I think, oh, I'll go and do that now. And then I think, oh, no, it's 3 o'clock. I can't. It's shut. Oh, for goodness sake.
Yeah. Yeah. And then you go back to England or wherever you're from and it's like the shops are open all day. You think, oh, this is so easy. I can literally go at any time and on a Sunday. Yeah. I mean, you have to embrace it after a while, don't you? Because otherwise it'll drive you crazy. But yeah, Annabelle's story is interesting because, you know, even though Australia is English speaking, there are very strong cultural differences, you know, not least in the way that they address each other. You know, everything, she talks about everything just being shortened to three words and she could never really work out what people were saying. And then also she just talked about, you know, the creepy crawlies and things like that and just getting used to that side of things, the heat, the riptides. So that kind of thing. So she was incredibly lonely initially as well because her husband found work first. He was going to be the breadwinner and she was going to be looking after children. And she describes just, you know, sitting alone in her apartment, you know, hundreds of miles away from home thinking, what have I done? But that's, I think that's 25 years ago now, exactly. But sometimes these stories, a lot of the stories start like that with a very, very kind of challenging beginning and with challenges on the way. But ultimately, I like to think that the end of the story is always uplifting. There's no one that regrets what they've done or no one that particularly wants to go back to their native home.
Yeah. It's interesting. I remember all the times flying back to the UK and how I'd, without thinking about it, I'd think kind of in my head and I'd say to other people, I'm flying back home. I'm going back home next week. And I was referring to it as home. And I just remember one year just suddenly saying, oh, I'm going back to the UK. And I remember hearing myself say it and thinking, oh, I didn't say home. And then
I know exactly what you mean.
Yeah.
And that happened to me this year as well. And it's weird.
Congratulations.
It's quite nice, isn't it? Because
it
actually
really is.
Home is never, you know, when you've left it for that amount of time, but it just becomes just habit, really, then, because it's not home, is it? But it's still, I mean, you know, who knows really what home is? Home is where you feel comfortable. But I also feel, in my case, I stopped saying home when I lost my parents, and I think that definitely makes a difference. And it's nice then to actually say home in my real home here, and it really does feel like that instead of being torn between two countries.
Yeah, and that's a big thing, of course. You mentioned grief at the beginning when you lose people who you're close to, whether it's family or friends that are back home, if you like, or in your native country. It's very difficult. Even if you are able to go back to the funeral, you then come back to your life and you just feel so distant from what's going on.
Yeah, and the guilt as well, because of course with my parents, my mum passed away incredibly suddenly, you know, with no one expected it. And of course you go through that horrible guilt thing, thinking, because you always think that you're going to have that extra bit of time with loved ones, and of course you never really know that, do you? And so that was very difficult to deal with. With my dad it was a lot longer. He had an illness spanning over 18 months, so it was hard, but at least there was times to really to chat. But what I would say, actually, Hannah, even though you come back and you sort of think, oh well, you know, I'm feeling the distance more than ever, in some ways what death does, i.e. when people get together at a funeral, you do talk and you do bond, you know, quite deeply because of what's happened. So I would say that actually with my extended family, so, you know, uncles and cousins and things like that, I would say that actually my relationship now is stronger with them than it was before my parents died, because we've kind of, like, you know, talked about something as traumatic as losing someone close to us. So it doesn't always have to be like that.
Yeah, I know what you mean, definitely. Well, there's so many amazing stories in this book. It's a really great idea. It's called Hashtag Living the Dream, Expat Life Stripped Bare. And it's all been put together by Carrie Fraze, who we've been chatting with today. Listeners can get the book from our website, tre.radio, in the bookshop section there. Carrie, thank you so much for joining us. I've really enjoyed chatting with you.
Thanks, Hannah.